Good evening, everyone. Gemar Chasima Tova. Bereshus Demar Da Asra. I was surprised that it took 47 seconds to mention Mashiach. I was hoping a little faster. But Baruch Hashem, it's an incredible schus to be here in this Pesach Knesset. I could say that I've only been here a few times, but each of the times that I'm here, it's always a beautiful aliyah, an aliyah ruchni, and a beautiful experience. You come into the shul and you feel the warmth. You come into the shul and you feel a sense of achdus. You come into the shul and you feel a little bit of Mashiach, a little bit of geula. So Rabbi Kaplan, thank you so much for opening your Pesach Knesset to this Kila Kedosha, and halavai in the zuchus of you hosting our Kinas Tshuva. Halavai you, together with your entire Kila and our entire community, should be sealed for a chasima tov in the Sefer HaChaim. I was also asked, just before we begin the shir, to remind everyone that tomorrow evening is the Beaker Holdings Kidney Donation Awareness Event, beginning at 8 o'clock p.m. at B'nai Jacob Shari Zion. I'm sure you've all seen the publicity. It's going to be an important event, first of all, to... Thank you. There are acute needs within our own community, but also to help familiarize the Olam with the concept of kidney donation. I think to destigmatize some things, certain things that we assume often are just non-starters or non-conversation points. And although, again, it perhaps is not in the most convenient of times in the middle of a week between Yom Tovim, everyone has a number of things going on. But first of all, just to come to show support for the Cholim in our community, just to come to be able to ingest some of the information. And sometimes, you know, sometimes even showing up is important. Sometimes when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that we care enough about the other to be able to take time out of an otherwise hectic or manic week, just to be able to recognize that there are individuals within our community who are suffering, who are having difficulty, and who are in need of a refuah, whether or not you or I or any one of us here or anyone in the community could provide that refuah, the Ribbono Shel Olam is the ultimate Rofei Cholim. And by showing up and just showing that we care, emoting a sense of empathy, recognizing that there's a din of arvus, collective responsibility for one another, that brings refuah li'olam as well. That brings healing to this world as well. So again, that's tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock p.m. at B'nai Jacob Shari Zion. You can see Dovi Ziffer for any additional information or go on to Baltimore Jewish Life. I want to thank Ellie Klein. So I think that this is the third year in which I've been zocheh to give a tshuva shir in this side of the community, although it's also the third venue. So I don't know what that means, that I can't hold down a venue. Okay, I guess I got invited back, so it couldn't be that bad. But Eli dedicates the shir, Le'ilui Nishmas, his father, Yechiel Michal, Yehuda ben Aryeh. And Eli, although I never had the schus to know your father, Zichrono Livracha, the schus to know you. And I'm sure, again, there's a lot of your father's neshama in you. And I have no doubt that you, together with Ricky and your children, the lives you live every day, the Torah you learn, the chesed you practice, together with this shir, should provide a beautiful aliyah for his neshama. I'll start with a confession, because this is the season for confessions. I often have an inherent discomfort with speaking on the topic of tshuva. And it's for one simple reason, that sometimes when people speak about tshuva, they're often exhorting others to perform tshuva. And that's not my role here tonight. In fact, whenever I get up, I mention this on Shabbat Shuva as well, that whenever I get up to talk about the topic of tshuva, the words of the Baal Musaf in his tefillah before Kaddish ring in my ears, Ki chotei uposheya ani. I'm no one to tell you what you need to do tshuva for, and I'm no one to tell you how to do tshuva, or if you should do tshuva, or when you need to do tshuva. Instead, what I choose to share with you tonight are some of my own reflections, because I, like all of you, are on a journey during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. All of us are trying to find our way. All of us are trying to find our way back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, trying to find our way back to ourselves, trying to find our way back to our people. You know, as Rabbi Kaplan said, even the tzaddikim do tshuva. Everyone is trying to return. And the difficult part is sometimes we don't know exactly what we're looking for. Sometimes we don't know exactly what we're returning to. I know I want something bigger. I know I want something better. I know I want something more holy. I know that I want my life to be different. Not because my life is bad, chas v'shalom. I know that I want to be different. And not because I'm bad, chas v'shalom. But I just know that I want more. And sometimes we come into this season with incredible hopes, incredible aspirations, incredible dreams. But they're not fully baked because we don't know what it is that we're doing. We don't know what it is that we're seeking. We don't know what it is that we're trying to find. Now part of that is just the mystical journey of self-actualization. And some of it is because you spend a lifetime looking for yourself. And after 120, sometimes you find out who you are and sometimes you don't. This is the great mystery of the human condition. The Ribono Shel Olam programs us to be mevakshim, to be searchers, but doesn't always necessarily allow us to understand clearly what it is that we're searching for. So we're all different people, with all different backgrounds, in all different stages of life. But the common narrative that brought us all here this evening is that we're searching. We're looking for something. So the Torah that I want to share with you tonight is the Torah for my personal journey, and hopefully it'll help you along your journey as well. I want to begin with a source that's not related per se to our topic tonight. And it's from a sefer called Chukos Hager. I hope there are enough sheets. I apologize if there are not. This is from a sefer Chukos Hager. And the sefer Chukos Hager is a sefer, as one could imagine, about the halachas of geirus, halachas of conversion. And in this sefer, it's not really a mechaber, it's a compilation. The author brings together a number of different shailos and tshuvas, a number of different responsa. And this particular tshuva is from one of the rabbanim in the 50s, 40s and 50s in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Moshe Halevi Steinberg. Rav Steinberg was one of the preeminent poskim in Inyanim of Geirus. And my friends, I want to share with you this incredible tshuva. Look how he begins in paragraph Aleph. He says, L'chavas naiti b'inyan nohri. He speaks at a particular Gentile who came before the Beis Din in Yerushalayim to go ahead and convert. And remember, you could see from the date, this is over 40 years ago. And what happened? L'sha'avar chavar pi'il b'miflaga ha-nazit ha-yadua l'shimtza v'yesh la-haniach sheba'atzmo hishtatif b'ma'asim nishayim. And Rav Steinberg here goes ahead and highlights a tshuva that is going to blow your mind. Who shows up in the Beis Din? Who shows up to convert to Yiddishkeit? None other than a young German man who admitted that he was a Nazi during the war. And he comes before the Beis Din. He says, I have Jewish blood on my hands, but I've been chozer b'tshuva, and I want to convert to Yiddishkeit. Comes before the Beis Din asking to convert. So they bring this case to Rav Steinberg, was the Av Beis Din. He was the head of all the Batei Dinim for Gir in Eretz Yisrael. And the shaila was, can we convert this individual or not? And you look at the tshuva, there's a lot more on this sheet than we're going to cover this evening. You look at it on your own. But essentially, what he highlights is a twofold internal struggle that he has. He says, on one hand, from what he calls, from a perspective of what he calls, mibchina enoshit, umibchinas hale'umi. From a personal perspective, from a national perspective, there's no way we can let this guy convert. How can we ever call him Achinu Ata? How can we ever welcome him into the ranks of Klal Yisrael? How can we ever accept him as one of our own, knowing what he's done? But then, if you go down a little bit, Rav Steinberg says, Abba Mebchinas Ha'alocha Hayevesha. But he says from the perspective of just what he calls dry halacha, not dry halacha that is not interesting, but pure halacha, devoid of emotion, devoid of personal negius. Rav Steinberg then goes on to say, of course he can convert. Of course he can convert. He quotes from the Rush who says that even if a person from Amalek comes along and says that he or she wants to convert, we accept them as Gerim. He quotes the Gemara that says that Nebuzaradan, Rava Tabachim Nebuzaradan, who was the chief general of Nebuchadnezzar, who was known for the most barbaric bloodlust. He took special joy in the murder of children. Nebuzaradan converts, the Chazal tell us. The Gemara says, B'nei Banav Shel Haman, the grandchildren of Haman, were learning Torah in B'nei Brak. I don't know if it was Panovich or somewhere else, but they were learning Torah in B'nei Brak. Sir Steinberg says, you see from here, the gates of tshuva are open. The gates of tshuva
are open to Amalek, open to Nebuzaradan, open to Haman, open to the Nazis Yimach Shem V'Zichram. And to every Aseres Mei Tshuva, I reread this Tshuva. Because I think as much as it's a halachic responsa, it's so inspiring and fills us with hope and optimism. Because no matter how badly I messed up this year, I'm not Nebuzaradan, I'm not Haman, and I'm not a Nazi. Okay, I could count that as an accomplishment. Baruch Hashem, you gotta start small sometimes. But what an incredible idea. This gives you a window. Sometimes the way to appreciate something is through the extremes. If the Rishay Rishayim, if the worst of the worst, the most barbaric of humanity, Shari Tshuva Lo Ninalu, that the gates of Tshuva are not closed, then this inspires us with incredible optimism. If this particular individual in question, I don't know what happens at the end, because if Steinberg delivers the psak, whether this individual converted or not, it's not brought down in the particular tshuva. But this should fill us with incredible hope, because sometimes, and we'll discuss this in greater depth, sometimes we think we're beyond salvation. Sometimes we think we cannot be saved. Sometimes we think that we're just shivri kalim, we're broken utensils. We don't really articulate it. We don't say it like that. But it's the way we think, and so we stunt our own growth, we stunt our own self-actualization, we prevent ourselves from becoming the people we can become. So this is the way we begin tonight, with the premise that no matter what I have or have not done this past year, whether I've committed smaller averos, larger averos, whatever it is, just know, the Shari Tshuva are open. The gates of return are open. You know, I mentioned on Erev Rosh Hashanah, to the Daf Yomi Shir, after Shir, I mentioned the idea that it's always striking to me how many people dislike the Yamim Noraim. How many people dislike it? Really, like with the, you know, nobody wants to say it because we like to sound frum. So no one's going to tell you they don't like Rosh Hashanah, they don't like Yom Kippur. But a lot of people walk around with an overwhelming sense of doom and gloom. What's going to happen? I know that Ribbono Shel Olam is going to catch up with me at some point in time. And understand, my friends, what a flawed ideology and theology is that. Yes, these are days of judgment. But it's important to remember who judges us. The Ribbono Shel Olam who loves us more than our own parents. The Ribbono Shel Olam who loves us more than our own spouses. The Ribbono Shel Olam who loves us more than we love ourselves. He is the one who sits in judgment. So no one likes to be judged, let's be honest. But at the end of the day, if I have to be judged by someone who loves me and cares for me so much, to be judged by someone who never closes the gates, no matter what I do wrong, no matter how heinous the act, no matter how atrocious the behavior, should inspire us with a sense of optimism and hope. But I want to draw your attention to a specific nekuda, a specific point within the tshuva process. If you take a look at number two, there's a very well-known Gemara Maseches Yuma. The Gemara says, "Ge'amrei Shlokish Gedola Tshuva. Tshuva is great. Shezedonos Naasos Lo Kishkagos. Tshuva is great because if a person performs proper tshuva, and again, we know that Rambam Hilchos Tshuva brings down the framework for tshuva, the mechanistic framework, which we're not going to get into tonight. But Reish Lakish says tshuva is great that if a person does tshuva, Shezedonos Naasos Lo Kishkagos, then even one's intentional sins can be relegated to the status of unintentional sins. Incredible thing. I've done intentional averos throughout the year, but if I do proper tshuva, I could transform the intentional averos to unintentional averos. Shnei Amar, Shuvi Yisrael, Hashem Elokecha, skip a little bit. Ini, the Gemara says, is that so? V'amrei Shalgish, Bar Shalgish has another statement. Gidola tshuva shezadonos na'asos lo kizichuyos. Tshuva's great because my intentional averos can be relegated to the status, not just of shkagos, not just of unintentional averos, but kizchuyos, like mitzvos. What an incredibly counterintuitive statement. Meaning, the first statement was difficult enough to intellectually ingest. What do you mean? That if I do tshuva, that my averos, my intentional sins, can be converted to unintentional sins. Okay, I can hear that. Maybe now I'm enlightened. I understand the world in a different way. Had I known then what I know now, I would not have committed those averos. So I understand the intentional averos can be reframed as unintentional averos. But then Reish Lakish takes it a step further. And he says, no, when a person does sincere tshuva, his or her averos are na'asis lo kizichuyos, become like merits. So the Gemara says we have a contradiction. Which one is it? Does tshuva transform one's sins into unintentional, mistaken acts? Or does tshuva transform one's sins into mitzvos? To which the Gemara answers it's not a contradiction. Lo kasha, last line in number 2. Kan me'ahava, kan mi'ira. The Gemara says we're referring to 2 different types of tshuva. This tshuva me'ava, tshuva from love, we'll just use a regular translation for now, and tshuva mi'ira. And tshuva ultimately, again, from fear, or from awe, or from reverence. And what the Gemara seems to be saying is the following. If a person undergoes the process of comprehensive cathartic change that we call tshuva, that's motivated from a sense of yira, fear, whatever that fear may be, fear of punishment, yira sa'onesh, then that tshuva takes you far. It will transform your intentional averos into unintentional averos. But if a person is able to tap into this dynamic of tshuva me'ahava, of a tshuva out of love, then one is literally able to transform their averos into zechuyos, into merits, into mitzvos. And I'm going to make another confession. Every single year I read this Gemara, and every single year I try to wrap my head around this. What does this mean? I understand transforming intentional acts into unintentional acts. But to take averos and to turn them into mitzvos, what is this dynamic of tshuva me'ava? What is this dynamic of tshuva from love? And more importantly than what it is, or just as important as what it is, how do we tap into it? So if we had more time, I would give you a whole variety of different mahalchim in terms of what tshuva me'ava is, what tshuva me'ir is. But instead, because the hour is late, we'll just do one approach. And to appreciate this approach, we have to understand the author of this particular statement. You know, sometimes, especially again, if a person learned in yeshiva, so very often the emphasis is on the statement, not really on the author, not really on the personality who's espousing the idea. But the truth is, if you really want to understand the meaning of any ma'amar of Chazal, any statement, you have to know who's speaking. So remember again, this beautiful Gemara that's taught us about tshuva me'ab, tshuva me'ira, tshuva out of love, tshuva out of fear, was written by a sage by the name of Reish Lakish, Reb Shimon ben Lakish. Reish Lakish was a second generation Amora who lives in Eretz Yisrael, really occupied a position of leadership in Eretz Yisrael between the time of 250 and 290 CE. We're very familiar with Reish Lakish. Many statements of the Gemara are attributed to him. But let's spend a few moments, speaking about Reish Lakish's background. And here, my friends, we see something amazing. There is a dramatic dispute between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, the Babylonian Talmud and the Jerusalem Talmud, about the childhood and early years of Reish Lakish. According to the Yerushalmi, and according to the Medrash and Koheles Rabbah that you can go to, we're not going to look at it, I'm just pointing it out to you, you'll notice that the narrative of Reish Lakish is the narrative of a typical good yeshiva bachar. A boy who grows up in a very fine home, enrolled in the finest of yeshivas, pays attention to his rebbeim, to his moros, mamish is never late, never plays hooky, everything is fantastic. And he grows up to be an Adam Gadol. He grows up to be Reish Lakish, he grows up to be one of the greatest Amoraim. But as we know, the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, has a dramatically different Reish Lakish narrative. If you take a look at number 10, one of the first stories I'll tell you about Reish Lakish is a very strange episode. Number 10, the Gemara says, Reish Lakish zabin nafshe leludoi. Reish Lakish allowed himself to be taken captive by the Ludoim. Who are the Ludoim? So Chazal tell us, the Ludoim were a cannibalistic tribe. And Reish Lakish allowed himself to be taken captive by them. He says, what happened? Shagobadei chaisev agalgalta. Now, actually, what really happened was, Reish Lakish sold himself to these cannibals. He sold himself to them, and he has a plan. What's his plan? He took with him, the Gemara says, Shakal Bahadei Chaisa Vagalgalto. He took with him again a bag with a stone in it. And the Gemara then goes on to explain that the Ludaim, you know, even cannibals have feelings. So what would the Ludaim do? Before they ate you, they would offer you one last wish. One last wish. You could have anything you want, one last wish. So they say to Reish Lakish, we're about to eat you, so what would you like? What would you like? Reish Lakish says, here's the deal. I'd like you guys to sit down on a chair. I'm going to tie you up. And I want to be able to give you 1.5 slaps. 1.5 patches across the face. Okay. It's a small price to pay for eating someone for dinner. So they said, okay. So what happens? Rish Lakish has his whole plan. He's got a bag with a stone in it. They don't realize what he has. And what ends up happening? He kills off all of the Luda'im. He kills them all. He gets them all tied up. And essentially, again, he kills them with pure, blunt trauma. He hits them with a stone in a bag, and he kills each of the members of this cannibalistic tribe. This is Reish Lakish. A little bit different than the Yerushalmi's narrative. He wasn't exactly at night Seder. He was going ahead and he was killing out cannibalistic tribes. The story of Reish Lakish then continues. If you look at number 11, and this perhaps is the most well-known Reish Lakish story. The Gemara says, Yom Achad, Havakas Sachi Rabbi Yochanan Biardena. One day, Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Jordan River. Chazi Reish Lakish b'shavar liyardina abasrei. Reish Lakish saw him, and he ran down into the river after Rabbi Yochanan. Amarlei, Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Chiluch l'araisa. He sees Reish Lakish's strength. He sees Reish Lakish's vigor, and he says, my dear Reish Lakish, Chiluch l'araisa. If you would only channel that energy, if you would only channel that koach to Torah, to Ruchnius, Reish Lakish, I see your vigor. I see your vitality. What you could do, what you could become, who you can make yourself into. And Reish Lakish responds, Amalei, Shufrach Lenashim. Well, your beauty belongs to women. Rabbi Yochanan was known as an exceptionally handsome man. So Reish Lakish essentially says to him, your beauty doesn't belong with men. Your beauty is almost of a feminine quality. So you're telling me my strength should be for Torah. Your beauty should be for women. To which Rabbi Yochanan responds, Amarlei, Ihadris bach, Yehavna lach achosi. To which Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Samik idyon, you think I'm beautiful? You should see my sister. And if you come back with me to the Beis Medrash, I will go ahead and give her to you as a wife. Now, in terms of the dynamics about how Rabbi Yochanan did this without speaking to his sister, or what, you know, dinner was like at home the next evening, I don't know. But what's clear from this Gemara is that Rabbi Yochanan sees something spectacular in Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan sees something out of the ordinary. Rabbi Yochanan sees a power, a vitality, a passion, a vigor, a koach that has been abused and misused all of these years. But if Reish Lakish would just take that same koach and just channel it in a positive direction, there is no telling what Reish Lakish could become. So Rabbi Yochanan realizes to say to Reish Lakish, listen, come back to the Beis Medrash and we'll have a chavrusa together. I'm offering you some FaceTime with the Gadol Adar. That's not going to get him to the Beis Medrash. To offer him challen, not just on Thursday nights, but on Mondays and Tuesdays also, is not going to get him to the Beis Medrash. Offer him a beautiful woman, that will get him to the Beis Medrash. Shalom lishma balishma. Reish Lakish was not coming to the Beis Medrash because he heard the shiurim were excellent. He was coming because he realized that if there's a girl who's more beautiful than this Rabbi Yochanan, I've got to meet her. So what happens? The Gemara ends. The Gemara says, "Boy, let me hadul asui mani b'lom atzed." We're going to skip that for now. Akar yei ba'asniye. Reish Lakish comes to the Beis Medrash. He begins to learn v'shavye gavra rabba. And Reish Lakish doesn't just become a bal tshuva. Reish Lakish doesn't just repent for his past misdeeds, but the Gemara calls him a gavra rabba. Reish Lakish becomes great. Rabbi Yochanan was on the mark. Rabbi Yochanan understood, just by the way, as an aside, the greatest message of this Gemara, this is like a commercial break for just a second. The greatest message of this Gemara is the power of believing in people. The power of believing in people. Do you know at the end of the day why Reish Lakish came to the Beis Medrash? So it's easy to say it was for a girl. Reish Lakish, I guarantee you, was no stranger to the social scene. And I guarantee you he had no problem picking up women. He didn't need to go back to the Beis Medrash in order to find a beautiful woman. I'm sure he had his choice of women. So why does he come back at the end of the day? Because do you know what it means when the Gadol Hador believes in you? Do you know what it means when the Gadol Hador, the undisputed leader of Klal Yisrael, says to you, I believe you could be something great. And I'm even willing to allow you into my family. The koach of believing in people, which as an aside is such an important yisod in parenting. Again, this is Mamisha commercial, just for 30 seconds. How important it is in parenting to make sure that our children know that we believe in them. But you know, the tricky part is, your children have to know that you believe in them, even when they fail the test. They have to know that your belief in them is not tied to any school or life metric. They have to know that your belief in them is unequivocal and unqualified. Do you know what it could do for Shalom Bayis when one spouse knows that the other believes in them? You know, sometimes people think that the key to fixing marital problems is putting the offending spouse down. You know, so if my husband messes up, I don't mean to use the husband as the example, but I'm just using it as an example. If my husband messes up, if I remind him how badly he messed up and what he did, Barachel Bitra Hakitano, and lest he chas v'shalom forget, I'm going to tell him today, I'm going to tell him tomorrow, and by the way, even though I say I forgive him, the next time we have a fight, I'm going to bring it up again. Because if I remind him of it, he'll really change his ways. There is nothing further from the truth. When you make a person feel like a shmata, when a person knows, when a husband knows, when a wife knows that their significant other doesn't believe in them, there's absolutely no motivation for change. Motivation for change in life comes from when you know that there's someone in your corner. When you know that there's someone who's always rooting for you, even when you mess up. When you know that there's someone who, when you fall, doesn't say, I told you you would fall. I told you it was going to happen. I warned you about it. I told you about it repeatedly. We all have people like that, and they're of zero help in life. To be true to a relationship, whether it's our children, our spouses, our friends, is to be a constant advocate and a constant cheerleader. Klal Yisrael has a Reish Lakish for one reason, and it wasn't because Rabbi Yochanan had a beautiful sister. It was because Rabbi Yochanan chose to believe in a guy who everyone else wrote off. All everyone else saw was an isvarf. All everyone else saw was a mess up. All everyone else saw was a rasha. And Rabbi Yochanan says, my gosh, this guy has so much power. If I tell him I believe in him, that'll give him the impetus, the push, ultimately again to believe in himself. And Reish Lakish does begin to believe in himself. He becomes not just a good guy, not just an okay guy, not just a reformed highway robber, but he becomes a Gavra Rabba, to the point that Reish Lakish says something that is so incredibly beautiful. If you take a look at number 8. So we know again, the Torah Kedosha tells us that after Adam and Chava sinned, so the Torah says, Vayishalcheyo Hashem Elokim Migan Eden, La'avodes ha'adam asher lukach misham, V'ribon Shalom sends away Adam and Chava from Gan Eden, Vayigarish es ha'adam vayashke mikedem l'gan Eden. The Ribono Shel Olam literally by Garish chased away. He drove man out. He chased away. And the Medrash points out what a fascinating word choice. Why by Garish? Remember again, the Torah just said in the Pasuk before, Vayishalcheyu, he sent him away. The Torah uses the word by Garish. Where else do we see the word by Garish? By divorce. Divorce is called Gerishin. Right? Divorce is called Gerishin. So look at number 9, the Medrash says, Vaygarish es ha'adam, Reb Yochan, Reb Shimon, Lakish, listen, the brothers-in-law have a machlokes. Reb Yochan, Amar ki bas koin, shenisgarsha ve'enu yuchol alachzor. So Reb Yochan says, that the Ribono Shel Olam divorced Adam. He divorced Adam. And what was their divorce like? Their divorce was like when a koin divorces his wife. What's the halacha when a koin divorces his wife? He can't remarry her. Kohen is not permitted to marry a divorcee, even if it's all his own divorcee. So Rabbi Yochanan says, when the Torah employs the lashon of vayigarish, what that means is the Ribono Shel Olam divorced Adam Arishon in an irreparable, irreversible way. There was a gerushin. Adam, get out. Get out and you can't come back. There is no return for you. Comes along Reish Lakish and Shimon Lakish, number 9, second line. Kibas Yisrael shenis garsha. Vihi yechola lachzor. And Reish Lakish says, no, my dear brother-in-law. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu divorced Adam Rishon, there was a divorce. There was a rupture. There was a schism in the relationship. But it was like when a Yisrael divorces his wife. What's the halacha when a Yisrael divorces his wife?
not going to divorce his wife, as long as the wife has not married anyone else in the interim, they could get back together. They could repair things. So you see, my dear friends, Rish Lakish says, there's a way back to Gan Eden. There's a way back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No matter how serious the rupture, no matter how serious the schism, no matter how serious the strain on the relationship, even if there is a gerushin, the Ribono Shel Olam is Yisrael, I'm the Isha, and even if Chas V'Shalom there is a divorce, there is a return to Gan Eden. You'll say to yourself, Reish Lakish, how do you know such a thing? And what's the answer? What's the answer? Because he lived it. Because Reish Lakish says, I was cast aside. I was far away. I was outside of the Gan. I was divorced from the Ribono Shel Olam. But yet, despite all of that, I found my way back. Reish Lakish becomes the Gavra Rabba because he believed in the ability to return to Gan Eden. So the Gemara then goes on and tells a very dramatic story. Number 10. Yom Echad, Hava Miflagi Bei Midrasha. One day, they were having a halachic argument in the Beis Medrash. Okay? Seemingly very innocuous argument. Hasayif Vasakin Vapigyon Varomach Umaga Yad Umagal Kotzer Me'imasai Mekablin Tuma Mishaski Mar Melochton. So without getting into all the halachic intricacies here, but suffice it to say that if one has a metal utensil, so a metal utensil is capable of receiving tumah, contracting ritual impurity. When does a metal utensil contract ritual impurity? When it's finished. In other words, an unfinished utensil cannot contract tumah, cannot become ritually impure. So they were discussing in the Beis Medrash, we're talking about a sword and a knife and an axe and all these different metal instruments. Instruments, when are they considered to be finished that they could be makabel tumah? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Mishi Yitzrafen Mikivshan. Rabbi Yochanan said, as soon as they're put in the oven, right, when they are tempered in a furnace, as soon as they're tempered in the furnace, as soon as they're put in the heat, it's finished. Reish Lakish Amar, Mishi Yitzach Tzachon Bamayim. No. Reish Lakish says, after you take the metal utensils out of the furnace, there's one last stage. What's the last stage? You immerse it in cold water. And it's only after you immerse the utensils in cold water that they are finished, and therefore only then that they are makabel tumah. So machlokes, not a big deal. But look what happens next. Amar Leih, Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, listah b'listiyusei yada. You know, a thief, right? A murderer, a bandit, knows his trade. What does Rabbi Yochanan say to Reish Lakish? You would know better than me when the sword, when the axe, and when the knife is considered to be finished. Because these were the tools of your trade for many years. Lista belisti yuseyada. A thief knows his malacha. Amar Leih. To which Reish Lakish says, Umaya Hanasli. So tell me, dear brother-in-law, what good was my entire journey, if you're going to say that? What good was all of my work? What good was all of my avoda, if you say things like that? Hasam Rabba Karali. So, Hacha Rabba Karali. It's very nice they call me Rebbe in the Beis Medrash, but you know what? When I was a bandit, they also called me Rebbe. They might have called him Admar, they might have called him whatever they called him, because he was the Gadol Hador in his listos. So what good? I was great there when I was a bandit, and I was great here in the Beis Medrash. Reish Lakish, you see the pain in his words. He says, Rabbi Yochanan, let me ask you, what he's essentially saying is, in your eyes, do you still look at me as that same person? Do you still look at me as that same bandit, as that same thief, as that same Rasha Marusha? What have I been doing all of these years? Have I not grown in life? Have I not self-actualized? Have I not transcended my previous corrupt self? Or am I just the same guy? I was Rebbe then, I'm Rebbe now. To which Rabbi Yochanan says, calm down. Amar Leih, Ahanoi l'cha da'akravina tachas kanfei hashchina.
What do you mean, what have you accomplished? You're a Jew. You're underneath the divine wing. You're close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're Heilig. You're beautiful. You're special. Of course you've accomplished so much. But what was done could not be undone. Chalashtaitit Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was upset that he had hurt his beloved brother-in-law so much. Chalash Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish Mamish was broken. And as a result, Nach Nafshei Terab Shimon Ben Lakish. Reish Lakish dies. What does Reish Lakish die of? Reish Lakish dies of a broken heart. Reish Lakish dies because he thinks he didn't matter. Reish Lakish dies because he thought that deep down, I'm still the same Rasha Merusha. That deep down, I'm still the same morally bankrupt individual. And the Gemara ends off, V'havakamitzta'er Rabbi Yochanan Basrei Tuva. Tuva. Rabbi Yochanan was exceptionally distressed as well. And it's a difficult Gemara to understand. It's a tragic Gemara. It's a tragic Gemara because Reish Lakish had so much to give. Reish Lakish had so much to do, and yet his life was cut short, not by an illness, and not by a tragic accident, but literally Reish Lakish dies because of a broken heart. Reish Lakish dies because he felt, I thought I was a tzaddik. I thought I had changed. I thought I was different. But I guess I'm still the same guy. And if I'm still the same guy, then what's the point? If I'm still the same guy, so why am I masquerading as a tzaddik? If I'm still the same guy, so why am I sitting here over this open Gemara? If I'm still the same guy, so why am I plugging away for hours and hours in the base medrash? I'm the same Rasha. I'm the same Lista. I'm the same negative personality. And I guess that's never going to change. And if you take a look at number 11, the Chachma Shlomo the Marshal has a beautiful insight here. He says, Nira bar nira dahaki kamerlei, mi istlacha rishusa lachni, meini velomer listim, belistin yusta, yoda, dihar kvar mushar shlo yomer lebal tshuva, zuchor ma'asech harishonim. The Marshal says that ultimately, Reish Lakish says to his brother-in-law, how could you say that to me? Why would you say those words? Don't you know that there's a halacha that you're not supposed to remind the Baal Tshuva about his past, that you're not supposed to bring up his misdeeds, that you're not supposed to remind him about all the time that he squandered away? And he goes on and he says, Elevadai baza'ata mekantereini, shahayisi listim. You have to remind me that I was a robber. And look, the Marshal adds in here two words that are mind-blowing. I should have underlined it. I apologize. It's number 11, the third line, three lines in. Shayisi listim machmas dochak. Reish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, my brother-in-law, do you think I wanted this? Do you think when I was a little kid, I dreamt about being a highway robber? Do you think that when I was a little kid, I wanted to be the mess up? You think when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a Russia? You think I wanted to be on the periphery of society? You think I wanted to be written off? You think I wanted other people to cross the street when they came me walking, saw me walking towards them? You think that's what I wanted? I had dreams also. I had aspirations also. I wanted to do something great. But machmas dochak, things happened to me in life. You don't know my story. You don't know my background. You don't know my circumstances. I didn't grow up in a family like yours. I didn't have opportunities like you. I didn't have choices like yours. Machmas dochak. I made bad decisions. But I didn't make them because I was looking to mess up my life. I made them because I had extenuating circumstances. I made a lot of wrong turns. But I tried to correct them. But it appears that in your eyes, I'm still the same listen. I'm still the same robber. I'm still the same mess up. I'm still the same Russia. Vayisi mezulzal. It's true. I was mezulzal. I was exceptionally messed up. But I did tshuva. And I thought I turned myself around. But I guess I was wrong. Because if you still call me the listis, and you Rabbi Yochanan, you love me. Remember, you're the one who believed in me. You're the one who offered me your sister. You're the one who invited me into your family. And now I see that even you don't really believe in me. You believe in my ability to reform my behaviors, but you don't believe in my ability to change my persona. And this is the great, tragic, heartbreaking, eye-opening reality that Reish Lakish thought he understood. Maybe this whole time, all I've done is change my behaviors, but I'm still the same person inside. Inside, I'm a Rasha. Okay, I don't rob anymore. I don't steal anymore. Now I learn Torah. But my Tzura Sa'adam, my persona, my gestalt, my essence, who I am, what I am, is still the same. And when Rish Lakish thinks that despite all of his years of exalted spiritual service, he's still the same robber, he dies of a broken heart. Rish Lakish dies with the thought that although I changed my behaviors, I never really changed myself. And in fact, this concept of our ability to change our persona, our ability to change who we are at our core, seems to be shrouded in a lot of dispute. If you take a look at number 12, the Gemara Masechah Shabbos writes, Hayman debitzedek he gavert tzadkan, Amram Nachman by Yitzhak, bitzadkan by mitzvahs, Hayman debimadim he gever asher dama, Amram Ashi he umna he gan by tabcha. And here, without getting into even the entire Gemara, but the Gemara Masechah Shabbos discusses that depending which zodiac sign you're born under, which constellation you're born under, that goes ahead and determines your proclivities, or that determines your identity. So you see already that Chazal seemed to indicate us. Now it's true. So if I'm born under Mars, the red planet, so I'm going to shed blood. I have the choice. I could be a Moel, I could be a Shochet, I could be a murderer, I could be a surgeon, I could do any of those things. But it's almost as if, again, there's a certain fated existence, fate. There's a certain thing, there's a part, I am who I am, and there's only so much I could adjust it or tweak it. To a certain degree, again, who I am is what I am, and what I will be forever. In fact, if you look at number 13, the Gemara says, Itmar, Rabbi Chanina Omer, Mazel Machkim, Mazel Ma'ashir, V'yesh Mazel Yisrael. Rabbi Chanina says, literally, one's mazel, the English translation over here is planetary influence, okay? That one's mazel makes him smart, one's mazel makes him rich, and yesh mazel li Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan Amar ein mazel li Yisrael. So what does this mean? One, this is a problematic, it's a difficult gemara to understand. Yesh mazel li Yisrael, ein mazel li Yisrael. What does this mean? Do I have the ability to not just change my behaviors? Behavior modification, we all know we can do. Do I have the ability to change who I am at my core? Or at the end of the day, will I always be a certain kind of person? And the only variables are simply the behaviors in which I engage. So again, I put a lot more on the sheet than what we're going to focus on. But you look at number 15, the Rashba has a beautiful idea over here where he explains that even if you hold Yesh Mazel Yisrael, that there is Mazel. And what Mazel means is that we are born with certain proclivities and certain inclinations and certain midos and certain taivos and certain wants and certain desires. And I have a set of these things that is different than yours. But I could change that, says the Rashba. Even if my Mazel is a certain way, you could change your Mazel into something different. In other words, what Chazal were trying to tell us was, it's not only our behaviors that we have the ability to change, but it's who and what we are at our core that is subject to change as well. You know, tomorrow in Daf Yomi, or actually today already in Daf Yomi, last few days, we're learning the sugya of Ben Sora Remora. So if you look at number 16, it's from yesterday's Daf. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Eino na'asa Ben Sora Remora, ad shiyochal basa v'yishte yayin. Shenemar Zola Vasove. So we know Ben Sora Mora, a boy, 13 years old, for approximately 3 months after he becomes a bar mitzvah, is subject to the laws of Ben Sora Mora. If he steals money and uses the money to purchase wine and purchase meat, stole from his parents, uses the money to purchase wine and meat and eats it, consumes it, he's executed for this crime. So the Gemara asks in number 17, this is tomorrow's daf, so those of you who learn daf, you're getting a head start. Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Levi Omer, you know, Ben Sora Remora, not that we're questioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but if I were to question God, I would say it doesn't make any sense. So the kid is at risk. Let's agree on that. The kid is not doing what he should be doing. Right? He's stealing money. He's engaging in gluttonous behavior. But tell me, because he stole money and he eats meat and drinks wine, we put him to death? I mean, remember again, it's prohibited to steal. The penalty for theft is you repay it depending on what you stole, depending on how you stole, the circumstances of your theft. You have to repay what you stole. Death is never the penalty for theft, leaving aside kidnapping. But death is never the penalty for theft. So asks the Master Bilal, say, Lili, you're going to put the kid to death because he's a shtickle gluttonous? Doesn't seem to make sense. Ella, number 17, second line, Higia Torah, Lesov Daito Shel Ben Sora Remora. Rather, the Torah understands what's going to happen with this boy. Shesof Migmar Nechase Abib Umavaki Shlimudo Ve'enoi Motzein V'yotzi Leparshas Drachim Umalaste Mesabrios Amra Torah Yomos Zakai Va'al Yomos Chayiv. So the Gemara says, we're familiar with this Gemara. The Gemara says, you're right. The Ben Sora Umora hasn't done anything now that technically warrants the death penalty, but what we know is the following. That someone who is willing to steal to support a gluttonous lifestyle, at some point in time, he is going to burn through his parents' money, and then what's going to happen? What's going to happen? You know, once you're used to theft, you're used to theft. It's hard to get a real job after you're used to theft. So what's going to happen? He's going to start stealing from other people. And at some point in time, you know, his parents, maybe willingly or unwillingly, turned a blind eye. Other people won't turn a blind eye. And they're going to stand up and try to protect their assets. And what's going to happen? He's going to kill someone. So at the end, he says, the Gemara, we know this boy is going to become a future threat to society. Therefore, we choose to execute him now, while he's still quasi-innocent, and before he's harmed others, then allow him to become the menace we know he's going to be, and have to kill him then. Number 18 asks, guess who's back? Reish Lakish. Amr of Shim ben Lakish. Vichy mipnei sha'achol zeh tartimar basra v'shasi chatzi lugay na'atalki. Aviv v'imo motzin oso l'saklo. Reish Lakish is incredulous. Now, by the way, why is Reish Lakish all up in arms about the Ben Sora Rumora? Because it's him. He's like, wow, I can identify with that kid. Right? That was me. That was me. So Reish Lakish says, really, we're going to execute someone like that? Rabbi says, Reish Lakish, Ella, lo haya b'lo asid liyos. Ben Sora Rumora never happened and never will happen. B'lama nechtav. So 1 second. The Torah is there to teach us how to live. If Ben Sora Rumora never happened and never will happen, then why is he included in the Torah? Amra Torah, yamos zakan va'al yamos chayiv. The Torah says, I'm sorry, v'lama nechtav, wrong source, end of 18, v'lama nechtav, josh v'kabal schar. So Reish Lakish says, what do we do with the parasha of Ben Sora Rumora? What do we do with it? We learn it. We learn it, and it becomes Torah Lishma. There's absolutely no practical application of Ben Sora Rumora. Never did happen, never will happen. Rather, we just learn it as Torah Lishma. We learn it for the sake of learning. One more source, look at number 19. Amar Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yonasan says, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Ani Re'isiv, I saw, I've seen a Ben Sora Rumora. V'yashavti al kivro. And I sat on his grave. What's happening over here? Meaning, we have disputes in halacha all of the time. But generally, we don't have disputes in what we call mitzias. Mitzias means a reality. So the Gemara is discussing, did Ben Sora Umora ever happen? So you have Reish Lakish saying, never ever happened. Rabbi Yonasan saying, I'll take you to the cavern. I'll take you to the grave. I'll show you, here lies Ben Sora Rumora. I'm going to show you the grave. I went to the grave. Literally, I sung. It means I visited the kever. I don't know what you're talking about. Of course Ben Sora Rumora exists. So what's happening over here? So Rav Melech Bitterman, the son of the Lulav Rebbe, in his Be'er HaParsha, says something absolutely amazing. Take a look at number 20. He says over here, I'll tell you this outside. He says, what does Ben Sora Rumora represent? Ben Sora Rumora represents an inability to change. What Ben Sora Rumora says is that if you're 13 years old and you stole money from your parents and you bought meat and you bought wine and you consumed that, there is only one road for you. There's only one derech. There is an inevitable reality that you are going to face. You are going to become a glutton, you're going to become a thief, and ultimately you're going to become a murderer. And that is an inescapable reality. To which Reish Lakish says, unequivocally false. There is no such thing as a person without a choice. There is no such thing as a person who doesn't have a chance, an opportunity to change. There is no such thing as a person who cannot totally, wholly, and fully remake him or herself. Reish Lakish says, the Torah teaches us about Ben Soromar because there are many lessons to learn. But lo haya velo yihya. Because what Ben Soror Umora says is that once you make certain decisions in life, there's no way out. There's no backpedaling. There's no plan B. There's no detour. There's no rerouting. That's it. You're stuck. This is who you are. This is what you are. And this is the person you will be until 120. To which Reish Lakish says, I could tell you it's not true. I could tell you it's false. I could tell you there was never a such thing as a Ben Soromar because I am living proof to this. I was that kid. I was worse than that kid. I lived every single aspect of the most negative and depraved life one could possibly imagine. And I'm here to say you could change. I'm here to say not only can man change his behaviors, but man has the ability to change his persona. If I want to remake myself, if I want to remake my identity, I have the ability to do it. So what about Rabbi Yonasan? What do we do with the Hilig Rabbi Yonasan? Rabbi Yonasan said, I went to the kever. Selamai, what is Rabbi Yonasan saying? Rabbi Yonasan saying is, I've been to many levayas of people who thought Ben Soror Umora was true. I went to many levayas of people who lived their lives thinking that change was impossible. I could take it to kvarim of people who knew the changes they needed to make in life, who knew the adjustments they needed to make to their personalities or in certain circumstances, who knew that in order to be successful in life, they had to fundamentally and profoundly, cathartically remake themselves. But they thought it was impossible. They thought it was e'afshir. They thought it was beyond reach. So they died with the mindset of a Ben Soror Umora. They died with the mindset that change, comprehensive personalistic change, is simply impossible and unattainable. And now we begin to understand the great tragedy of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish dies of a broken heart because he thought that based on Rabbi Yochanan's statement, the only thing he had changed was his behaviors, but that he had not changed himself in a personalistic persona dika fashion. I changed my behaviors, but I'm still the same thief. And the greatest tragedy is that Reish Lakish was the one who had preached to everyone else, you could get back to Gan Eden. There's a return to Eden if you want. Reish Lakish was the one who said, Ben Soror Umora never happened, never will happen, because you could change anything and everything you want about yourself. But you know, sometimes the things that we say to other people and the things that we know to be objective truths for everyone else, we often have difficulty absorbing and inculcating within ourselves. Reish Lakish dies of a broken heart because he thought that personalistic change was impossible. I know I could change my behaviors, but can I ever change myself? Reish Lakish's problem, and with this we'll bring it together, Reish Lakish's problem was one of self-identification. My friends, listen very carefully to the next two lines. Everything in life depends on how you self-identify. Do I self-identify as a bad person who does good things? I'm a bad person. I'm a Ben Soror Umora. I'm a Rasha. I'm a Listen. I have good days at times. And at some point in time, you know, I could do good things. But if you ask me who I am at my core, I'm not good. I'm broken. I'm in a state of disrepair. Or am I a righteous person who sometimes messes up? And my dear friends, that is not a matter of semantics. It goes to the very core of our ability to be successful in life. If we were alone with ourselves, and we were to ask ourselves the simple question, how do I look at myself? Do I believe that at my core I'm a bad person who happens to do some good things? Or am I truly a good person who sometimes messes up? And we know what the right answer is. You know, Rabbi Nachman writes, we're not going to go into this piece in too much depth because of the time, but if you take a look at number 22, Rabbi Nachman quotes in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Va'od ma'at ve'in rasha. So the Rebbe says, now the simple understanding of the Pasuk is that it's talking about the Messianic era. Va'od ma'at ve'in rasha. Literally, Mashiach's going to be here soon, and the rishus, the evil in the world, will disappear. But the Rebbe takes this in a totally different way. The Rebbe says, you'll take a look at the majority of this piece on your own, but take a look at paragraph Beis. V'chein tzarech ha'adam linso gam ba'atzmo, ki ze yadua, she'tzarech ha'adam lizar ma'od lios b'simcha tamid. So perhaps the most famous statement of Rabbi Nachman, mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha tamid. It's a great mitzvah to always be b'simcha. So I often say, I quoted this on Shabbos Shuvah also, I often say, you know, if you go to Eretz Yisrael, and you go ahead and you pull up at a red light, and there's a van that's plastered with Na Na Nachman Mu'uman stickers that pulls up next to you, so you know what's going to happen, and once that light turns red, a bunch of guys are going to get out, turn up music, and start dancing around. Mitzvah G'dol Lios B'Simcha Tamid. I don't know if that's what Rabbi Nachman had in mind. Rabbi Nachman himself was not always a boisterous, joyous individual. Rabbi Nachman speaks about times in which he struggled with depression, in which he struggled with difficulty, in which he struggled with profound sadness. But yet the Rebbe says that there's a mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha tamid. So where does the simcha come from? And this is very important because, you know, we live in a society that teaches us that we're always supposed to be happy. Always supposed to be happy. And if you're not happy, take a pill. And if the pill doesn't work, then you could blame it on someone else that you're not happy. Or you could do whatever you need to do to make yourself happy. We don't believe that. First of all, there are times when you're not supposed to be happy. Persons lo alinu in Shiva, Tisha B'Av, there are times that halachas are not supposed to be besimcha. So what does the Rebbe mean when he says mitzvah gedola lios besimcha? And again, it's a much longer piece. Because of time, I'm not going to go into it. But Rabbi Nachman says the following. Every single Jew has an obligation to find something good in him or herself. Find something good. It's easy to pick out our faults. But says the Rebbe, identify what's good in you. And the Rebbe says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You're going to find that one thing that's good. And then what's going to happen? When you begin to explore that good thing, what are you going to discover? That even my good is flawed. Even my good is flawed. You know, even my good is imperfect. The Rebbe says, the avoda of life is just find something good. Find one good thing in yourself. Because if you could find one good thing in yourself, then you could make the most incredible statement of existence, which is, I am a good person. I am a good person. And the Rebbe says, if you could tell yourself you're a good person, and even better, if you could believe that you're a good person, then you'll be besimcha tamid. Happiness in life comes about from the realization that at my core, I am a good person. I mess up, I make mistakes, and sometimes exceptionally severe and significant ones. But when I make those mistakes, I'm a good person who messes up. Not chas v'shalom, a bad person who occasionally does something good. Mitzvah gidola lihios besimcha tamid, says the Rebbe, means find the good in you. Because when you find the good, you could self-identify as a good person. And when you self-identify as a good person, something dramatic happens. If I am a good person, then I can make of myself whatever I want. Bless you. The sky is the limit. If I am a good person, I could become who I want, how I want, when I want. There is no stopping me. I am an unstoppable spiritual force who could become whatever I want, however I want, whenever I want. And now we begin to understand, to loop this all the way back, to Tshuva Me'avo and Tshuva Me'ira. Remember again, we started this year almost an hour ago with the statement of Reish Lakish. And what did Reish Lakish say? Reish Lakish spoke to us about Tshuva Me'avo, Tshuva Me'ira. And he said, Tshuva Me'ira is very powerful. It could turn your zedonos, your intentional averos, into shkagos, into unintentional averos. But even more powerful is Tshuva Me'avo. Tshuva me'ava even turns your averos into mitzvos. We need some of that. Who doesn't want to wrap their arms around that? So what is it? Look at number 24. So the Sfasemes says something amazing. Niger Rebbe writes, he says 24 Aleph, look at the underlying lines, Dilapamim, Misorar ha'adam b'tshuva ayyidei ha'yira, me'otza kilkulim shenasa ayyidei ha'chatoim, u'mischarit ma'od amasachet, says the Sfasemes, and this helps us to frame the entire limud tonight. You know what tshuva me'yira is? Tshuva me'yira is when a person says, wow, I am such a mess up. I am such a mess up. God gives me so much, and every single year I mess it up. I want to stop being an ingrate towards God. I want to stop being such a mess up. I want to stop letting down the Ribon Shalom. I want to stop letting down my spouse. I want to stop letting down my kids. I want to stop letting down my chaverim. I want to stop letting down myself. It's enough with the sins. It's enough with the Tshuva Meira is when a person says to himself, I see that I'm so broken. I see that I'm so broken. I see that I'm so messed up. This is not the person I want to be. I want to change myself. I have to stop sinning. I have to go ahead and get back on the spiritual wagon of positivity. What's tshuva me'ava? The Rebbe says, paragraph base, ulefamim misorer ha'adam b'tshuva al yidei ahava shemispael eich b'koach adam b'ma'asim tovim la'asos d'malo va'al yidei zem ischait menachit. You know what tshuva me'ava is? Tshuva me'ava, I'll paraphrase the Rebbe a little bit. Tshuva me'ava, see, everyone thinks that tshuva me'ava means that tshuva because I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or tshuva because I love Torah, I love mitzvos. It's much simpler. Tshuva me'ava means tshuva that stems from a love of myself. I love myself because I'm good. I love myself because I'm righteous. I love myself because I have an incredible amount of Kiddushah. I love myself because I'm special. I love myself because I have kochos and abilities. I love myself because I could partner with the Ribono Shel Olam to make me better and to make my world better. That's tshuva me'ava. So Yesh Lakish says, look, they both work. They both work. A person could choose to do tshuva me'ira, which is a tshuva that is motivated from the brokenness, a realization of the brokenness. But Yesh Lakish says, I just want you to know that tshuva is only going to get you so far. That tshuva at most is going to turn your zedonos, your intentional averos into shkagos. But says Yesh Lakish, I want to tell you a secret and I can speak to it because I did it. I did it. Tshuva me'ava. Like Rabbi Nachman says, mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid. Find the good in you. Identify yourself in the proper way. I'm not a bad person who occasionally does good things. Fakert. I'm a great person who at times, maybe even very often, messes up. But I'm going to turn myself around. I'm going to turn my life around. I'm going to overhaul my entire personality because I know I can. Because I have good inside of me. I have Kedusha inside of me. I have holiness inside of me. The great tragedy of this limud is that the beautiful lessons that Reish Lakish taught us, he could not teach himself. The great tragedy is that the beautiful lessons of tshuva me'ava, loving yourself, appreciating yourself, seeing the good in yourself, the mitzvah gedol lios b'simcha tamid that he inspires us with to this very day, for some reason he was so broken that he could not internalize this. My dear friends, this, I think, is one of the most important messages for Aseres Yimei Tshuva. So many of us come into these days feeling, you know what, like, how do you tell if you have a good Aseres Yimei Tshuva? If mamish, you feel like a doormat, like if you feel that I am lower than a gnat, if I feel that mamish, like, I don't even have like the holiness of like the bird droppings on my windshield. Oh, I've humbled myself to such a degree. That's Aseres Yimei Tshuva. That's called clinical depression. That's not called tshuva. That's not called tshuva. Where tshuva is just the opposite. The greatest level of tshuva is tshuva me'ava. Is a mitzvah gedola lios besimcha, where a person says, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm great. You know how I know I'm great? Because you keep the doors of tshuva open to me. And not only can I change my behaviors, but I can change who I am. I can change what I am. I don't just have to change what I do, but I, if I want to, can even change the person I want to be. We so often think that we are stuck in certain molds. We think that we are stuck in certain frameworks, and there are certain aspects and realities of our life which we cannot change. But no matter how many things you can't change, there are so many beautiful and important things that we can. The tzura of the person we are. You know how many times I hear people saying, you know, we've all had interactions like this, where a person gets angry, oh, I have a short fuse. I have a bad temper. As if saying that you have a bad temper, oh, you have a bad temper, okay, I got it, sorry, I didn't mean to start up with you. It makes so much sense now that you said it. Now that you told me you have a bad temper, I understand. Essentially what you're saying is you have no bechira. Or people walk around with the worst midos of cynicism and sarcasm. And this is who I am. It's not who you are. It's who you choose to be. So you chose to be cynical. You chose to be sarcastic. You chose to be apathetic. You chose not to care. You chose to be dispassionate. So the bad news is I made a lot of wrong choices. The good news is every single one of them is reversible. Bless you. The good news is I could change it all around. The good news is Tshuva Me'ava is at my fingertips. Mitzvah Gidola Lios B'Simcha, I have good in me, and as long as there's good, I can make myself into anything and into everything I want. My dear friends, if there's one message that I hope you take with you tonight, is you could do and you can be whatever you want. Yamim Noraim is not about beating yourself up. Yamim Noraim is not feeling, oh, like it hurts over here because of all of the ashamdus now. And the more guilty I feel, the frummer I am. That's not what Yamim Noraim is about. Yes, we have to make amends for the things we've done wrong. We have to do tshuva for the things we've done wrong. There's a process. The Rambam lays out the framework for tshuva. But the goal of Yamim Noraim is optimistic hope for growth, optimistic hope for change, and the reality that I could perform tshuva me'ava. I could be whoever I want. I can do whatever I want. You don't want to be that cynical guy anymore? You don't have to. You don't want to be the wife who puts down her husband? You don't have to. You don't want to be the husband who doesn't show off interest in the relationship? You don't have to. You don't want to be the sarcastic guy who never really cracks open the masechta because he's too insecure, because he wasn't a good learner in yeshiva? You don't have to be that person. You're the guy who makes the jokes all the time because you're insecure about something, you don't feel you can forge meaningful relationships. You don't have to be that person. You don't have to be any of those people. I could be whoever I want. I could be whatever I want. I could remake myself in any way I want. That's the great gift of the Yamim Noraim, the great gift of Aseres Yimei Tshuva, the great gift of Tshuva Me'ava. And I want to conclude with one last source, and then I really will stop for this evening. Take a look at number 25, and with this we'll stop. The Kohen Gadol, we know again in his Avodah on Yom Kippur, says an incredible tefillah. A beautiful tefillah. This tefillah was said after he does the avodah inside the Kodesh HaKadosh and the Holy of Holies. He comes out, and as he's standing by the outside of the curtain, he says this beautiful tefillah. And you could see most of it, and again, most of the tefillah is pretty logical. The Kohen Gadol is asking for rain, for parnasa, for all the different types of things. And then he says something, if you look at the end of the second line, he says, Shana shalotapil isha pri bitna. Ribono shel olam. Let this be a year in which a woman will not miscarry. What a strange statement. Let this be a year in which a woman will not miscarry. Meaning, of course, we don't want any miscarriages. We want all the pregnancies to continue full term. Right? But why don't you just say this should be a year where everybody should what? Have refuah. Everybody should be healthy. Everybody should be okay. Meaning, let's make a more general statement. Why you only, when you don't ask for a refuah shlema for anyone else. You don't say that those people who are afflicted by illness should be healed. All you ask is that the women shouldn't miscarry. And my dear friends, the Baal HaTanya says something amazing. The Baal HaTanya says, pregnancy represents potential. You know, a pregnant woman has a glow to her. A pregnant woman has a glow. Why? Well, first of all, because she's partnering with the Ribono Shel Olam in the creative process. She's an active partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But also because that inside of her, she's housing that incredible potential. Inside of her, she has life. And that life, who knows what it's going to be? Who knows what it's going to become? Literally, she's pregnant with potential. Says the Baal HaTanya something amazing. The Kohen Gadol says, Ribono Shel Olam, Klal Yisrael is pregnant with potential. Each of us has so much incredible potential to become the people we know we need to become, to make the changes we know we need to make the adjustments that we put off for years. Each of us is pregnant with potential, but Nebuch, do you know how many miscarriages happen after Yom Kippur? Do you know how many miscarriages happen once the Yomim Noraim are over? Says the Baal HaTanya, people have the most beautiful aspirations, the most beautiful dreams, and then what happens? We all know what happens. Like you undergo a cathartic change with that first bite of the bagel on Matzah Yom Kippur. You know, it's almost like the chol just seeps back into you. And especially again when you turn on your phone and you realize, oh, I left the office early on Erev Yom Kippur, I have to catch up on this. And the mundane world jumps back on you. We're pulled back to what we once were. We're pulled back to life prior to the Yomim Noraim. And we lose all of our traction. Says the Kohen Gadol, Ribono Shel Olam, give us a year. Shelo Tapil Isha Pri Bitna. Give us a year where there are no miscarriages. Of course, no Chas Hashem, no physical miscarriages. But give us a year where there are no spiritual miscarriages. Each of us is pregnant with potential. Each of us has the ability to accomplish so much, to do so much, to become so much. Each of us has the ability to do Tshuva Me'ava. Each of us has the ability not just to change our behaviors, but if we so desire, to remake ourselves. We're pregnant with this beautiful potential. And we should be Zochem Yerza Hashem, just like no woman wants to walk around perpetually pregnant. After a certain point in time, the glow wears off. After a certain point in time, let's just birth it already. It's the same thing in Ruchnius. It's beautiful to be pregnant with spiritual potential. But at some point in time, you have to stop waddling and you have to start birthing. That's the avoda of the Yomim Noraim. May we be zochem Eretz Hashem. In the zechus of coming out together at such a late hour on the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. May we be zochem Eretz Hashem to internalize the lesson that Nebuch, Reish Lakish, was unable to fully do. Reish Lakish dies with a broken heart because he didn't think he was really capable of tshuva me'ava, even though he taught us about it. Reish Lakish dies with a broken heart because he thought, at most I could change my behaviors, but I can't really change who I am. We're not going to chas v'shalom die with a broken heart. We're going to live with a complete heart. We're going to live birthing our beautiful potential. We're going to make this year Miratz Hashem of tshuva me'ava. May we be zocha, each of us in our own way, to change the behaviors we need to change the aspects of our life that we know are in a state of disrepair, but most importantly, may we be zocha Miratz Hashem to find the courage to make ourselves into the people we know we are truly capable of becoming. And in that merit, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu inscribe all of us together with our mishpachos, with our kihilos, with our entire community, with Klal Yisrael, for Ksiva v'chasima tova. Amen.